Tom Woods Show, episode 1295.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, the Tom Woods Show.
Folks, if you've ever thought about creating and selling your own online course, well, remember your host here has a teensy-weensy bit of experience creating online courses. So I've actually put together some resources for you, a free report, plus a step-by-step video training series walking you through everything you need to do. Doesn't cost you a thing. Pick it all up at tomwoods.com/makecourses. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. Man, do I waste time on social media. I really have got to quit doing it. And people say, well, you should switch over to some of these other better platforms, better than Facebook and Twitter for various reasons. They have smaller audiences, but they're not going to yank you off their platform and all that. And I'm very sympathetic to that argument, but at the same time, that's not really getting to the heart of my problem. Because even if it was a new platform, the problem is I get sucked into conversations I shouldn't get sucked into. It doesn't matter what the platform is. It's this problem of mine. I see people, I am the stereotype. I really am the stereotype of the person who can't allow an error to go unanswered on social media. I mean, you would think at age 46, I would be past this. You would think there would be a certain maturity level that eventually sets in at which you say, some people are just wrong and there's nothing I can do about it. There are people, as I'm recording this, who are saying things that are so atrociously wrong that probably people within, 50 yards of where I'm sitting right now, who are saying all kinds of crazy things, and there's nothing I can do about that. And the best thing I can do is not spend my time on these arguments. You may say, yeah, but Woods, there could be some bystanders. That's true, but at the same time, how many really are there going to be? I mean, a couple of dozen at most. Whereas, if I'm making a video, which shame on me, I have not been doing, that reaches a lot of people. People share these podcast episodes and my books and articles and email newsletters and whatever. That reaches a big audience, and I can correct a lot of errors that way. So I should be spending my time doing that. And yet, sometimes I feel like somebody just has it coming. I can't restrain myself. So today, I want to talk about a particular run-in I had, not because this particular run-in really matters in the grand scheme of things, but because it does tell us something. After all, we just talked to Scott Adams this week about persuasion, and we've done a number of episodes. We've had Jonathan Haidt and a number of others come on to talk about persuasion, how to get people to listen to you and even change their minds to agree with you. And usually these guests come on to say, we're doing it all wrong and you got to change the way you're doing it if you want to hope to have success. Scott Adams was more pessimistic than that. He doesn't seem to think that merely changing your approach or trying to be empathetic is going to cut it, that there really, really is in virtually everybody, there's the built-in resistance to a change in ideas, political ideas, philosophical ideas, because we have different first principles. But you know what? I've even there just misstated it. He's not even really saying it's different first principles. It's emotional commitments to certain ideas. That's really what it is. And if you're trying to lob facts at these emotional commitments, you're going to have a problem. Well, anyway, this confrontation, let's say, I had the other day involved David Stockman. Now, of course, I'm not arguing with David Stockman. I would be surprised if he even did his own Facebook. But it was a comments thread from Stockman. And I just have to tell you about it. If you subscribe to my newsletter, you read a little bit about this. And I'm going to say more than I said in that newsletter. But I sent out screenshots of what actually happened. Now, if you're not getting my newsletter yet, I don't know what I have to do for you folks. But you got to do that. You may say, but Woods, I got so many emails over that Black Friday weekend. Yeah, I know. I warned you for a week that was coming. I warned you for a solid week. I do that every year, and most people just get a kick out of it. But anyway, I generally email if I can send one out once a day on a weekday, I can. Sometimes with five kids, I can't do that, and I don't reproach myself for it. But it's good content. I mean, I get rave reviews about this newsletter, and I give away free ebooks to get people on it. So as you know, I got some goodies. I got the one about the non-PC professors who refuse to apologize, and I get glorious domain names. So for that one, I got againstthemob.com. You go to againstthemob.com, sign up. You get that ebook and you get on my newsletter. And by the way, who wouldn't want to just type againstthemob.com into a device? Why would you not want to do that? Isn't that there's a certain cathartic joy that you get from typing in something like that? So there's that. And then I also bought the domain yourfriendsarewrong.com. So that's a good one. You can also get on my list there. I bought wrongaboutguns.com. I bought BernieIsWrong.com. All these are ways you can get on my email list because each one is associated with a different ebook. All right. Anyway, in fact, I got to write myself a note. I'm updating the pages for those sites. So I want to write myself a little note. Okay. Let's get back to it. The point is, in the newsletter, I talked about this whole matter with David Stockman, because Stockman is critical of Trump. He thought that there could be some benefit to somebody who would just be a wild card. But he was always a skeptic about the economic specifics of what you might get out of Trump, because what concerns David very, very much is spending and debt and also bad monetary policy. So that's his theme, no matter who the president is. He was, as you know, I mean, we had an episode of this podcast where he just went through and demolished all the progressive defenses of the Obama years, saying that none of this holds water. So he's been critical. I mean, he's been critical of president after president after president. That's what he does. That's what he does. So he's been critical of Trump from the right, you might say, economically. He's been critical of Trump from the right. And there are plenty of things to be critical of Trump about. And I say this as somebody who is very sympathetic to and understanding of people who, you know, their instincts are, well, there's something to be said for Trump because he's entertaining. And because his enemies are deep state creeps, and I certainly can't support those people, he has occasional deviations from foreign policy orthodoxy. I like that. He has brought about some degree of deregulation. I like that. I get and understand. And, you know, he's thumbing his nose at the politically correct crowd. I get that. And of course, the very kinds of arguments people make against him, like, oh, he's embarrassing us because he's look what he's doing to the office of the presidency. He's degrading it. But of course, that's a great thing from a libertarian point of view. You have to desanctify these offices. That in itself is, I do not understand. I understand left liberals and conservatives who say, I don't like Trump's vulgar style. Why? Well, I mean, what are you? This sounds like something I would hear from a supporter of monarchy. We can't have the sacred person of the king and the sacred office of the monarch degraded by such – why would you think that way? That's exactly what we need. We absolutely have to desacralize these offices. So anyway, those things are all fine. The problem is that's not all there is to Trump. And the problem, as I've said, is that he's not really grounded in very much. That is to say, he doesn't have a very deep knowledge of things. Now, that isn't to say that he's not good at what he does. The way he handled all those Republican candidates was very, very effective. And there is some real street smarts that goes into stuff like that. So I don't deny that. And I don't second guess everything he does, because half the time he's got some reason for doing it. So that is to say, he tweets something that seems crazy, but then you realize that actually there is some value from his point of view in doing it. So all those things I totally get. But as I say, because he's not really grounded, somebody like a Ron Paul has read all the relevant books and he's talked to all the relevant people and he knows who the genuine experts are. He knows the people to consult. He's just always informed. If you watch that Ron Paul Liberty Report, you see he's always informed. Even on the campaign trail, on that grueling schedule of his, he was always informed. I would think to myself, well, I'd watch him being interviewed and I'd think, well, gee, I've got a real doozy that would help him out in this interview. I just read this morning and I would barely get the thought out of my head, and suddenly he's making the very point that I was hoping I could supply to him. You know, he was always one step ahead of me in stuff like that. With Trump, I do get the sense that he is being well-briefed about what his enemies are saying about him. And in fact, Nixon used to do that. Nixon actually had, that was one of the things Pat Buchanan did in the Nixon White House, was to write up news summaries. What are the people in the news saying? And Pat would write summaries and Nixon would write commentary in the margins and whatever. I mean, it's interesting. But I think because it does seem like Trump seems to know what they're all saying about him, and he does seem to know some talking points. But does he know the innards of history? Does he know much about the Constitution, let's say? Does he know these things? I don't think so. Does he know foreign policy? I don't think so. I think he has some instincts, but he's at this point up against the entire establishment. And I mean, I would love to see him do more against the warfare state, but I think even if he were inclined to, at this point, he's got to pick his battles because they're trying to close in on him, and they have been ever since his presidency started. So because he's not a Ron Paul, or for that matter, a Pat Buchanan, who shares a lot of views with him, and nobody's ever said Pat's a dummy. I mean, they say all kinds of nasty things about him. They don't say he's a dummy. He's very smart. His books are extremely well thought out and well written. But Pat, he knows the history. He knows European history. He knows American history. He knows foreign policy in general. He knows, you know, at least some economics. I mean, he's not great on some things, but Pat wrote a nice column about my book Meltdown, which is an anti-Federal Reserve book back in 2009. It's more than I can say for most conservative commentators. It's more than I can say for a lot of libertarian commentators. So he knows that stuff. Whereas you get Trump, and, you know, on the one hand, we got this bubble economy, and on the other hand, he's upset that they want to raise interest rates. Well, what? How do you want to reconcile all that? In fact, he can't even be counted on to appoint people who agree with him, to bring people on. I think there was an Elliot Cohen who almost came on in some capacity, and then Trump remembered he was a never-Trumper and nixed that. I hope I'm remembering that situation and that name correctly. But generally, he's brought people on who have not agreed with his, at least his stated views on foreign policy. I don't understand the personnel choices half the time. We heard all kinds of excuses about why he took on Mike Pence as his running mate. Well, he has to do this to appease the party and whatever. All right, but once you're the president, you can pretty much do what you want with appointments. So now we learn that Mike Pompeo, who right off the bat shouldn't have been chosen, has hired Mary Kissel to be his new senior advisor for policy and strategic messaging. I saw this in a tweet from Daniel McAdams of the Ron Paul Institute the other day. So she's anti-Trump, and here she is coming on board with Mike Pompeo. So more reason that he shouldn't have been brought on. And so if you look at some of her tweets over at targetliberty.com, there's a compilation of a few where she says things like, Assad and Putin are murderous dictators. I didn't know that. Who don't share American interests. Trump is delusional on foreign policy, frightening ignorance. So this woman was just hired. She says, Trump seems to think our nuclear umbrella, defense of Europe, Asian allies, is a gift and not in our own interests. Bizarre argument. Then another one. Wouldn't it be nice if we could get along with Russia? This is Trump's idea of foreign policy? Think about that. Oh, that's great. So that's what's happening over in the State Department. That was totally avoidable. I mean, he brings on people like this. So yeah, if you're not criticizing that, you gotta be crazy. All right, anyway, this is rather a long preamble to getting to what I was initially thinking of talking about. And that brings us back to David Stockman. Now, I've had David Stockman on a number of times, so most of you know who he is. He was the director of the Office of Management and Budget under Ronald Reagan, and he was a U.S. congressman before that. He's been involved in the investment world for a long time, and he's gotten more hardcore over the years. He's really, really great on monetary policy. He's really great on just about everything. I have a little disagreement with him on taxes. I understand where he's coming from, and I've tried to push back with him, but I'm not getting anywhere. But he's really good in his analysis. He's just smart. And in terms of his prominence, it's very hard to find anybody who's going to say the things about the Federal Reserve that David Stockman says, a guy at his level, I just don't think you will find. And I'm just seeing right here, he just emailed me back. I was asking, let's get you back on. I want to talk about what you've been writing. So we are going to arrange that within the next couple of weeks. So we'll get David back on. So he actually linked to a column that's behind a paywall. So you really didn't get to read the column. But you know what the column is about based on the teaser text. So here's what David posted. And you can see the title of his article is No MAGA, you know, Make America Great Again, for the Donald. The problem is bad money, not bad trade deals. So, you know, he's talking about monetary policy. That has really, really caused a lot of problems for Americans. So Stockman says, it is blindingly obvious that Donald Trump can't make America great again, and not merely because he's an impetuous loose cannon, the great disruptor with no semblance of a coherent policy agenda. The real barrier is that the Donald is a statist through and through, yet America's faltering debt and bubble-ridden economy is a victim of precisely a huge excess of statism, and most especially the suffocation of middle-class wages, jobs, and savings that stems from the depredations of the state's central banking branch. Now, again, I'm going to get emails. Please just don't send them, because I already know what you're going to tell me about Trump, that he's done the best he can, and he's the most libertarian president I'm going to see in my lifetime. I already know all the arguments. That doesn't mean I can't say these things, because this is obviously true. These things are obviously true. So whatever else you want to say, but he did this, he did that. Yeah, but I wouldn't say Obama was a great president because he gave us, you know, he did do a couple of decent things. I don't want to talk that way. This one did that, this one did that. I appreciate when good things are done, and I give credit where it's due. I think the overtures that Obama made to Cuba, and I think the Iran deal, I think those were good things. And so I said that. That's it. That didn't mean that therefore I better not say anything about Obamacare, because, hey, don't you appreciate? I don't want to be that way, because I wouldn't be that way if this were a private company and we had a CEO who was just a disaster. But he did a couple of good things that I really liked. I couldn't criticize him for the other things. I just can't imagine that. Could you imagine there'd be a company that would say, now listen, if we're doing anything wrong, we want all our engineers to shut up about that. Okay, we want to. It's more important that we continue on our present path than it is that we correct any mistakes. That's weird, okay? We the very people who would want to correct me for what I'm saying in this episode, if they were in the private sector, they would never, ever be issuing a correction like this to me. They would never be saying, keep your mouth shut or keep some perspective. This is probably the best CEO we'll ever have. What? Come on now. For the health of the company, you have to talk about what's wrong. So anyway, what's Stockman saying here? Well, he's saying that Trump basically has a state bias, a government bias to his world outlook and to the way he looks at the economy. That's not to say that he doesn't get at some level that deregulation is better than suffocating regulation, but a lot of people more or less see that point. It's that he's not, you know, he's a pragmatist. He's not an ideologue. He's not a free market ideologue. But everybody knew that. We've already had this conversation. I don't see why there's any controversy here. We've already had this conversation, and that was supposed to be one of the points in Trump's favor, according to some of his supporters, was that he wasn't ideologically attached to the failed policies of the past, that he was just a businessman who would get things done and who would look at things empirically and without being tethered to some ideological commitment. That was supposed to be one of his great strengths. So don't try backing away from it now, because that clearly is true about him. I mean, how could it be otherwise? I mean, he grew up in a New York milieu, you know, making deals that involved government all the time. It'd be shocking if somebody who, you know, he says got along with all politicians had a consistent anti-state worldview. He doesn't. And again, his supporters or his semi-supporters or his cheerleaders will say to me, but he doesn't need to have that. He can still get some things done. Fine. If that's the position you want to take, fine. The point is, on the issues that really concern Stockman, Trump is missing in action, as was Obama, as was George W. Bush, and his predecessors. They're all missing in action because it's a problem of the whole regime. It's a problem that transcends any one president. But note that the criticism is not that Trump isn't doing enough, isn't intervening in the economy enough. It's that his instinct is to intervene too much. So that should be obvious. This is not a socialist making the criticism. No socialist says, you know, Trump is intervening in the economy too much. We need a more laissez-faire economy. No socialist says that. That should be obvious to anybody. And then he criticizes the Federal Reserve, the state's central banking branch, and says that this has harmed the middle class. All right, well, Trump is kind of all over the place on the Fed. It's hard to really nail him down. But if you really are a guy who thinks, I got to support Trump because he's going to stand up to all these eggheads out there And there are a lot of eggheads who should be stood up to. I don't dispute that. But he's going to stand up to them, and he's going to advance the interests of the great middle America. And that's why I'm supporting him. Why would that same sort of person think, you know, a giant banking cartel overseen by a monopoly central bank created by Congress and given special monopoly privileges sounds like a terrific idea to me. That sounds like that was devised by people who just have my interests in mind. I mean, wouldn't I expect somebody who has a slightly more, developed critical apparatus than that? I mean, right? Aren't these people congratulating themselves that they're able to see past the establishment who hates Trump, and they're able to see that he's actually a good guy, and they're able to see things that their stupid neighbors can't see? But when it comes to the central bank, what, they just get right in lockstep, or they don't know anything about it, and they're still going to shoot their mouths off. So here's what happened, that fairly modest statement by Stockman, because you look at spending and unfunded liabilities wasn't even on Trump's radar. And that's a big, big concern of Stockman. So here's a sample comment that I saw there. A woman wrote, "Who allowed this brainwashed, lying liberal on my page? I bet he is a professor somewhere. Typical liberal idiot." Okay, so I responded. "This is Ronald Reagan's director of the Office of Management and Budget. He's saying unsound money is incompatible with a market economy. You're actually disagreeing with that?" So again, what Trump is saying is that none of these presidents, I mean, Trump here, yes, but he said the same thing about Obama. He said it on my show. He said it on every outlet he could get on, that they're not dealing with systemic problems. I even had somebody say, "But look, Trump has already cut $22 million from something." $22 million, yeah, that'll buy us about an hour and a half's worth of time. I also point out in my newsletter that, look, Trump did not campaign on, "I'm going to make severe cuts and I'm going to reform the unfunded liabilities." He didn't, and so nobody's accusing him of breaking his promise. You can't break a promise you didn't make. But then the rest of what Stockman has to say is that the real problem is the Federal Reserve, which has hurt Americans of all classes. And he's developed that argument at length on this show and in his book, The Great Deformation, which I highly recommend. Here's what happened. The entire thread in response to Stockman consisted of people calling Stockman, David Stockman from the Reagan administration, a liberal, as if liberals, and of course we're talking about liberal in the American sense, obviously. How many liberals do you know criticize the Federal Reserve at all? And even if they do, how many criticize the Fed for being inflationary as opposed to not being inflationary enough, which is really the only criticism you ever get from the left? Usually the left ignores the Fed because the left has gone from question authority to shut up and obey. So the Fed, they're not going to question. So are these people running into a lot of liberals who are questioning the Fed, or a lot of liberals who say Trump is a statist and we need to get spending under control? Is that usually what liberals say? So what are these people even talking about? Do they even understand the debate? And I know people will say, "Oh, Woods, but you shouldn't be so nasty to these people. They're just good-hearted Americans, and they just don't know any better." All right, well, I'm doing the best I can to reach as many people as I can, but I'm only one person. I am trying. But how do you have sympathy for somebody who ignorantly denounces David Stockman, of all people, for being a left liberal? I mean, he uses the word statist. Now, you might disagree with that description, but it's obviously not something a liberal would say. I mean, that is totally uncomprehending. And if you don't know what the word statist means, then how about not saying anything at all? So again, he says he criticizes the state's central banking branch, and the folks in the comments can't come to the Fed's defense fast enough. Now, of course, none of them mention the Fed because I'm sure they don't even know what the state's central banking branch even means. All right, so maybe shutting up might not be a bad idea. And again, why shouldn't their instinct be that a government-established central bank with monopoly privileges is probably a bad idea? So instead, a critic like Stockman gets lambasted as a, quote, liberal, as if liberals are known for their criticisms rather than their instinctual defenses of the Fed. So this is like right out of Scott Adams' playbook from the other day. They see the world as divided into two camps. There can be only two camps. So if you're critical of my camp, you must be in the other one. You couldn't possibly be critical of my camp from some third position, because then my brain would have to make 50% more room to accommodate that extra branch. All right, I'm going to read you a few comments from the thread. You're not going to believe this. These are actual people. Person said, "You're just a delusional person. Apparently you want to tear down people and America rather than build us up." So there's that. So if you are concerned about the budget and the Federal Reserve, you don't want to build us up. You want to tear us down. Okay, well, that's just brainwashing. I don't know how else to put that. Here are the institutions that are screwing you and depriving your kids of an inheritance in one way or another. And you're going to say, hey, don't say anything about these beloved institutions. You got to build us up. Then we get, "You are just about the dumbest POS that I have heard since Obama and Hillary." And Obama and Hillary are in all caps, and Hillary is H-I-L-L-E-R-Y. "Then screw you, Stockman." Yeah, we're happy with the Fed. Okay. And then, "This guy is a nutcase. He has never been right about anything." He's never been right. So in other words, when he was critical of the bailouts, he wasn't right about that. So to make America great again, you want to bail out big companies and banks? Okay, that's a point of view. "He is a commie. You can believe that." David Stockman from the Reagan administration. How about that? He's keeping his communism a real secret. Then, "Don't lie to the American people." Yeah, we should be telling them the truth, that the Fed is their great savior. Then, "You are stupid." Okay, well, that one sounds like a genius. Then, in all caps, first of all, we get a graphic. It says, "Get lost, you communist ass." And it shows an elephant kicking a donkey. And then in all caps, we get, "David Stockman is communist ass trying to put American against American. He is an enemy of the state and his posts are treasonous at best." Okay, well, enemy of the state, hooray, because if you want to make America great again, you darn well better be. And to put American against American, yeah, I'm trying to put normal Americans against the Americans who run the Fed. Yep, you're darn right I am. Then, "You must have a degree from the University of Liberal Stupidity and a PhD in hate." It goes back to the beginning of the episode. Why am I doing this to myself? Why am I doing this to myself? Oh. Then this one, "Socialist propaganda." And then another one says, "Socialist moron." Okay, because there have been more since I sent out the newsletter. "Socialist moron" was one. So he's a socialist because he wants less government involvement in the economy. Okay. So on and on it goes. And as I say in the newsletter, thanks, conservative movement. This is the knowledge you've managed to convey to these people over the past 50 years. Somebody comes along and says spending needs to be slashed, the government's role in the economy needs to be radically diminished, and a lid needs to be put on the Fed, and all they can do is scream socialist. That is intellectual malpractice. Well, that's it. Now, what I'm going to do is, as I mentioned, we'll get David Stockman back on. We're going to have him elaborate on his case, on exactly what's been happening with American living standards and who's responsible for it, all that stuff, the real state of the economy. We're going to get Stockman back on and talk about this. But for now, that's what's out there. And I know there are more intelligent people who have sympathies for Trump. I know that. I don't want to caricature anything. And they would die 100 deaths before defending any of the people in that thread. But I am thinking that the people in that thread are, why would they not be representative of the base? Yeah, I know there are some intellectuals who can make arguments for Trump. But are they the majority of the supporters? And maybe some of these people have good instincts on some things. I mean, I want to give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe I've been going after the left for so long, I've forgotten how enraged I get going after the right. So this has been educational for me to go and see where things stand, and it's pretty bad. It is pretty bad. This is the job the conservative movement has done. This is what hundreds of millions or billions of dollars have been spent on, and it's generated this result. Pretty bad. Well, listen, folks, if you like what I'm doing and you appreciate what I'm doing and you enjoy these episodes, then I would like you to consider becoming a supporting listener of the show. So we have got one fantastic private group where we have just unbelievable exchanges. You're going to love these folks. You're going to learn a lot from these folks. It is a haven for you. But on top of that, there are many, many, many other benefits, including transcripts of all the interviews I do with guests. But there are many. I have discount codes for a lot of the websites you shop at, like the Mises store and stuff like that. But I've just got a ton of stuff for you to say thank you for supporting me and making it possible for me to devote this time to the show. So how do you do that? You go over to supportinglisteners.com. Thanks for listening.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.